prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Monday, April 21st, 2014. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Oh, it's great to be back. I had a little bit of a break on Friday, and it's always good to be. I miss my hour on the radio when we have those days.
Well, I don't necessarily miss my hour on the radio, but I do catch up with an hour's worth of sleep here and there. So
I guess you just have more of a life than I do. I don't know. But but I don't know. Gold didn't have much of a life today. In fact, it lost a little. $1,290 currently, down $470. You have silver down 27 cents at 1948. We had some big swings. You know, we had a high of 1957 for silver and a low of 1923. So big swings, about a 1.3% down on the day. Platinum was down $11 today at 1407 and palladium down 16 at 783. And you want to talk about big swings in the markets today, discussions about reports that South Africa could resume their mining, and you saw some earlier bigger declines earlier in the day, and they since come back a little bit. But you had platinum down over 2%, and palladium was down actually 3.6% on the day, and they both came back a little bit. But they had been closed since January 23rd, when the mine workers went on strike for higher wages. And it's reported that the country's three biggest mining companies are looking to offer raises to the 80,000 workers that are on strike to end the standstill. So we did see the metals fall, but since they did come back. You had copper fall about 0.1% today. Other commodities, they fell today a little bit. You had wheat, corn, soybeans, they all fell. Beef was stronger. But let's go ahead and look at the USDX today. That was up 0.11. It was there all day long, 79.76. I'm sorry, 79.96. Crude oil, 104. Not a lot of move in these pricing, you know, of these commodities. And in the paper markets today, you had they moved. It's like everybody is just sort of waiting. I don't know what they're waiting for, but the Dow was only up 40 points today at 16,449, along with the NASDAQ up 26, 41.21, and the S&P up 7, 18.71, and the 10-year yield 2.72%. Euro, I saw earlier today, 138, 1.38, still holding very strong for the euro. Everybody's waiting, Al. Waiting, waiting, waiting.
Waiting for what, Melody?
I don't know what they're waiting for. I mean, you even see it in the gold market. I guess they need some sort of action. They need something to happen. It has to be...
Well, what you're talking about, assuming everyone is waiting, it suggests that people don't have confidence in whether the markets are going up or down.
Exactly.
They're at a point in time when, I don't know, maybe it's going up, maybe it's going down. And if so, the momentum is being lost for any market you care to mention. I'm not saying that's happening, but if it's true that people have taken a wait-and-see attitude, well, it's evidence they don't have confidence in what had previously been happening, and they're watching to see what's next.
They delayed the Keystone Pipeline once again. And, of course, you have those environmentalists that think that it will hurt the environment. You also have the big battle is in Nebraska. The State Department is extending the input period for federal agencies to examine the pipeline project because of the potential impact of a pending Nebraska Supreme Court case. And in the meantime, you have old Warren Buffett just carrying that oil by his trains, just smiling proudly. I know. I hope they delay it forever. We can continue to carry this oil, and we don't need a pipeline. And what's funny is we have enough oil in this country anyway. Why do we even need to pipe it down? But it would create jobs, and it's something that it seems Washington doesn't want to do. They don't want to create. Forget jobs.
Well, the other thing about it that at least some people are considering is that if the pipeline was a new pipeline was added running from the Midwest up into the East Coast, that pipeline could carry the kind of crude oil that might be enough to make a difference for Europe. We might be able to compete with Russia in supplying Europe's energy needs, but without additional pipeline running from the Midwest on out to the East Coast, we can't do that because we just don't have the... We have pipelines that are sufficient to bring enough petroleum to the East Coast to meet the East Coast needs, but we don't have enough to bring additional oil to not only satisfy the East Coast, but also export oil to the European Union. And as a result, the European Union is dependent to a great degree on Russia, and the United States is losing leverage because we can't supply oil, and, you know, politics is all about what have you done for me lately.
The problem with that coming down from Canada, it's the sands, it's the oil sands, and it's a very heavy crude oil. It's not the light crude, and so, I mean, it takes a lot of refining, and it's very expensive to refine that type of oil. And it would take years for them in order to supply any oil to Europe. So, and I would think any problems with that is happening now as far as the filling of orders coming out of Europe, it will be resolved.
There's nothing we can do in the immediate future.
No, it's going to be resolved by the time they get, you know, anything coming down from Canada.
So if Europe wants to complain about Russia taking over Crimea and perhaps seizing part of eastern Ukraine, they want to complain about it. They're just going to have to learn to get by with a third less energy than they have up until now.
Mm-hmm. And consider now, I was still a little surprised that I realized that the European Union receives 25%, but I didn't realize that Germany is 50% dependent on that. Mm-hmm. So they have over 6,000 corporations currently in the in Russia. So, yeah. We know how this is going to turn out, but
it's already turned out. Now, I don't know. There are some people that aren't going to let it go. I get that. You know, I can remember when I was a kid, back in the 1960s. A friend of mine and I hitchhiked from Illinois down into Mexico. All right, we had packs on our backs and sleeping bags, and we were even carrying guitars. I didn't know how to play a guitar, but I was bringing one along. It was part of the image if you were going to be a hitchhiker and that sort of thing. We got picked up by a couple of guys giving us a ride down in, I don't remember, Alabama maybe it was Louisiana, I don't remember where. We're sitting in the back seat, and one of the guys in the front seat turns around and says, well, he starts talking to us about the war. And I'm thinking to myself, what war is he talking about? Is he talking about World War II or the Korean War? What war is this talking about? And I said, what war are you talking about? And he said, well, the war, boy, the Civil War. And all this time, I thought that had been over for about 100 years, but it was still a live issue down there. Well, that story comes to mind when I think about what's going on in the Ukraine. There are people that this deal is not going to be settled for a long, long time. They are going to insist on maintaining the issue, even after it is settled. Some people are just going to cling to it, and they'll still be talking about it and doing what they can to stir the pot, kick the hornet's nest around, and so we have to deal with that.
Yes, we do. And there's a lot of misinformation coming out of that area also. And it's really
a lot of misinformation going into that area also.
Yes.
You know, it comes out, it goes in, and I don't know where the truth is, but the misinformation is easily found. Finding the truth, a little harder.
Yes. Here's an interesting story. The U.S. Department of Agriculture, they announced today a new program, $150 million program. And what this program will do is provide investment capital to help small agriculture-related businesses in rural areas with cash needed to expand. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack announced in Cedar Rapids today the formation of the first rural business investment company, a for-profit firm licensed by the USDA to invest in businesses that otherwise might not have the capital to increase business opportunities. The USDA traditionally has offered guaranteed loans or direct loans for rural businesses. This creation of the Rural Business Investment Company is a new way to get more money. That's the way I see it, for USDA to establish a licensing procedure that makes farm credit bank funds available as investment capital. The banks cannot directly hold ownership stakes in companies through capital investments. So here you have the USDA creating a new division to give loans. You know, probably, I mean, you already have farms in rural areas that already get subsidies from various places, but
I think most of the subsidies go to the bigger farms.
It's probably where these loans might go to, too.
No, I think before they're done. Did they say how much they were prepared to loan?
$150 million.
Yeah, it's peanuts. Big deal. I mean, they are handing, even now, what, $55, $65 trillion a month?
Well,
mostly to bankers, or billion of it to bankers, and they've got $150 million for agriculture.
But here's just another sign now that shows that rural businesses are having problems, that this country is still having problems. When you have the USDA, an area where, you know, why should they be involved in providing loans? So, again, it's, you know, they can't hold direct ownership. So if these businesses fail, what collateral are they using?
They're using the land. If I were going to look at this, I'd say borrowing money from these people. You need to be careful and understand where your industry, the agricultural industry, is headed. And it may seem like a good idea to lend to borrow money right now, but you're borrowing that money, I'll bet, on you're securing it with your own land. And if circumstances change and you go broke, guess what? You're going to lose your farm. You're betting the farm on that loan. I don't know that to be true, but it's strong probability.
So 150 million, you're right, is not a lot of peanuts in today's world. However, what is the real goal behind it? And if it is successful in this area, then you'll see it pop up in other areas around this country. So.
Won't be long, Melody, before they're lending $150 million to radio talk shows.
You think?
Yeah. As soon as they get the farmers straightened out, then they're going to come work on the radio talk show hosts.
Here's something interesting, too. Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson is weighing limiting deportations of immigrants living in the U.S. illegally who don't have serious criminal records. According to a couple of people with knowledge of his deliberations, the change, if adopted following an ongoing review ordered by Obama, could shield tens of thousands of immigrants now removed each year solely because they committed repeat immigration violations, such as reentering the country illegally after being deported. They're going to get them in here one way or another.
They should be tried for treason. Everyone in the Congress of the United States who refuses to protect our borders against an invasion by anyone. I don't care if it's Red China, Russia, or Mexico. They ought to be tried for treason. If they're found guilty, hang them. That's what should be done. We were just listening to Harry Reid complaining about the demonstrators, the people who supported Cliven Bundy out there in Nevada. He's calling them domestic terrorists. And what he means by that are people who don't obey the law. Well, if Harry Reid is so interested in obeying the law, and his son, the lawyer, is so interested in obeying the law, when did they start obeying the law as to illegal aliens? When does government start enforcing that law? When does Congress start enforcing that law? The reason they are illegal is they are criminals, and no one is making a serious effort in government to stop it. And this is not about the Mexicans coming up here. It's about the treasonous whores in the cat house on the Potomac who refuse to protect this nation. That's what it's about. I don't have a problem with the illegal aliens, per se. My problem is with Congress and the Senate and the President. And more than one of them, not just the current Congress and the current president. Bush was as bad or worse. He encouraged them to come in here. These people encourage law breaking, and then they want to call other people domestic terrorists because they don't do what the government says. The government's not going to obey the law. Why should anyone else?
It'll be interesting to see if they get any of this pushed through before the election. I highly doubt, but just like everything else, will be pushed off. Even the Keystone Pipeline, that's all political. It's election year, so it started. You can see it, and even the Republicans, they're supposed to be against this, but they're we'll get something through that'll make everybody happy.
The Republicans are supposed to be against illegal aliens too.
That's what I mean.
The problem is the illegal aliens provide cheap labor for special interests that the Republican Party favors, and that's big business. They want cheap labor. So we'll bring in the illegal aliens, and they can knock the wage levels down for Americans across the board as we compete with the illegal aliens. And the Democrats like having the illegals come in because they know even if they're going to wind up working for major corporations, they're going to vote Democratic.
Yep.
So we have two political parties that are both in favor of breaking the law in order to serve either their special interests or their own or the party interests or the special interests of the people that the party represents, the super wealthy in the case of the Republicans, and neither one of them is doing what's right for the American people. They want us to vote for them.
Well, I guess we're just about heading into to break, Al. I hear the music right on schedule. Good job, Frank.
Frank did a good job of bringing the music on time, but we haven't done a good job of stopping right on time, have we, Melody?
No, we haven't.
No, we haven't. But Melody and I will be back in a moment on Financial Survival, and we will try at the end of the next 20-minute segment to see if we can stop on time then. Please stay tuned.
not make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis, here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. Program's brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
We got a little special going on. I don't know why I did it, but I picked up a bunch of silver dollars. They're new, and they're mint state silver dollars, and it's a novelty, and it's okay to buy a coin that's a novelty as long as it's expressed as a novelty or a gift. It's okay. So many times the problem is you have my competitors that will sell these novelties as investments, and I don't look at them in that way. And I picked up several for some of the boys, that teenage boys and young men in my family. They make wonderful gifts. They're $295. It includes shipping costs, but is the Baseball Hall of Fame silver dollars. The 2014 Baseball Hall of Fame coins are a unique endeavor for the U.S. Mint, convex on the reverse and concave on the obverse. And this is the first coin of its design. And on the front is the baseball. And it almost looks like, because of the way it's designed, it almost looks round. It doesn't look flat like a silver dollar. It looks round. And on the back is the baseball mitt. You know, the mitt, the catcher's mitt. And it also looks the same way. It looks like there's a, it looks like it's grasping, ready to grasp a baseball. And I'm by no means a baseball fan. I'll tell you what, these were really, really neat, and I bought a bunch of them. And so we are proud to offer these coins. They make wonderful gifts. They are signed on each coin. It was designed by Cassie McFarland. She was the designer of this coin. And it's a really a beautiful coin. It's a mint state 70 proof and $295, and that does include your shipping costs. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188, and these are certified by PCGS. So give us a call, 800-375-4188. Would you like one, Al?
Yeah, send a dozen.
Would you like a dozen? They're really
send a dozen.
You might not get a dozen, but they're really, you know, very unique. Very interesting.
Well, it sounds like they're stackable. I assume they're in their.
Well, they're in their plastic containers, and you
can understand that. The shape of the coin sounds as if they are stackable, in a sense where if they're, you know, on round.
Well, the coin isn't round. It's just the design that gives them the illusion that I mean, they're flat. But because of the way they're designed, it gives a depth to the design. And that's what makes it so unique. And that's why they just really caught my attention. Mm-hmm. I thought that is pretty cool.
All right. Well, sounds good. What's next, Melody?
Let's see.
Here's a poll from Yahoo.
Yes.
That's interesting. Michael Lewis argues in his new book, Flash Boys, that the U.S. market is rigged by a cabal of Wall Street firms and high-speed traders. Now, the question they're asking is the market stacked against average investors? Huh? Is it rigged? Is it manipulated? And according to the poll, 3,722 said absolutely, and 603 said no way. That is to say that 86% of the American people take it for granted right now. They believe that the markets are rigged. 5 years ago, the idea that the gold market was rigged was held by only a tiny minority, and it was otherwise laughed off by the majority of Americans investors as just another crazy conspiracy theory. But today, almost 90% of the American people believe that virtually all markets are rigged. Now, this is cause for some encouragement. The American people may learn slowly, but they do learn. More, it's increasingly obvious that despite control of the mainstream media, as Shakespeare once observed, the truth will out. In other words, you can try all you want to suppress the truth, but it's coming out. Ask Edward Snowden. All right? Ask the people at NSA. They tried to conceal the truth, but all of a sudden, the truth is coming out. The governments and financial institutions' lies are failing. The people are increasingly seeing the truth. How long before the people act on that truth remains to be seen. But having seen the truth, we can assume that the day of action and reckoning is growing nearer. So it's interesting to me. 80%, almost 90% of the people now believe what 5 years ago was just some kooky conspiracy theory. Truth is getting out. I mean, it's because of the internet. It's because of programs like this. It takes a while. It doesn't happen overnight. And once the truth gets out, then what? At minimum, people are losing confidence in the government. The government would have us believe the markets are not manipulated. Most of the American people believe that the markets are. And I believe that people are correct. So, what's going to happen, Melody? Do you think the manipulation will continue indefinitely, or are we coming to an end of it?
Well, I think reality will have its course. It usually does. Reality always, you know, hits home and takes over.
Kind of like a hangover, isn't it?
Yeah.
Last night I was really feeling good, and today, oh my gosh, got that hangover coming at.
Yeah, so no, I mean, I do believe reality will overtake markets. You know, perhaps they won't be real free markets, but I do believe the hand of manipulation will lessen. And I do believe once the markets begin to fall and things begin to unravel, you will have people more so, just like what we saw previously, come into the gold market overnight. I believe when things happen, it will happen very quickly. I believe we'll wake up to a brand new world, and those who waited to buy gold and silver will either pay very high prices or it won't be found at all. And, you know, over the years, I've heard all the stories of, oh, we don't have this product. There's a shortage of this and a shortage of that. And many times these stories are exaggerated. Many of these stories are simply not true. But on the other hand, we do know that there is a very small market with gold and silver. And when you have the mass and the general populace come into the market, the very small market of gold and silver will disappear. We've certainly seen how the U.S. Mint plays with their releasements of gold and silver eagles, the modern issue coins. I believe they will do that again in the future. They can't keep up with demand for whatever reason, and I find it hard to believe that when, you know, but you can have various factors that impact that. So, absolutely, and when that time comes, they will no longer be able to manipulate.
Well, the key, a lot of people believe the key event will be when the government and or major commodities markets admit that they can no longer supply gold. Somebody's going to walk in the door and order 100 tons of gold, and the market is going to say, oops, gee, we don't have it. We can't deliver it. Wouldn't you rather have paper? And they're going to say, no, I don't want paper. I want the gold. And at that point, there's going to be heck to pay. We'll watch and see. That'll be part of it. And the other thing is this. When we talk about people going back to gold, will they be going to gold because they see gold as a positive, or will they be fleeing from other things which they regard as a negative? And the answer is kind of subjective. I mean, I know he goes, well, I have both. Is that your answer, Melody? Both?
No.
Both? It's not.
I think you're
one time I guessed both, and this is the one time you're saying, no, it's not both?
I think this next time around, they will be fleeing from something. I mean, certainly people who are a little bit smart. But I believe they've hammered gold, and they have done such damage to gold from 1900 to the level that we are today. I mean, you're going to have some pretty big moves. So I think the initial move into gold will be they'll be fleeing, and then it will be overtaken by the higher prices and people. You know, hey, people buy when things are high. They want things then when everybody else wants it. They don't buy it now.
What they buy is momentum.
Yes.
All right. When they see something, that doesn't matter. If it's going up and up and up and up, that's when they're going to buy. If it's going down and down and down and down, that's when they're not going to buy. If it's just staying more or less steady, they're not interested. They want momentum. And that's what usually moves them, and whether it's stocks, bonds, gold, or anything else. Momentum. You know, if it's getting bigger, good, 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 good. If it's not, we'll wait. So that's where we sit, and part of the reason for the question, of course, is that gold is not simply an investment per se. It's a hedge against a failure of the dollar. And if the dollar becomes worth less and less, and it seems inevitable that it's going to happen, as it does, price of gold has to go up. We can sustain. Efforts are being made to sustain the price of the relative value of gold somewhere around 80 on the U.S. dollar index. I don't know how considerable those efforts are, but I am sure that there are countries around the world who are holding a big stack of American dollars and or U.S. Treasury bonds, and everybody knows they're going to lose they're going to lose value. Everyone understands that. They also understand that if anyone starts selling those treasury bonds or starts trying to dump those dollars, there's going to be a stampede. And even the people holding it will lose their assets, right? Those foreign governments. So they're caught in a strange position where they're darned if they do and darned if they don't. If they hang on to the dollar and the treasury bond, they're going to lose value and purchasing power. If they try to sell them to any significant degree right now, all the rest of the countries will probably jump in at the same time, and the price will fall faster than it can be sold, and they're going to lose their assets. So they're caught in a peculiar situation where no matter what they do, they're going to lose their assets. And at the moment, well, I won't say no matter what they do. If they sit on them, they lose. If they sell, they lose. Yeah, pretty much whatever they do, they're going to lose their assets. But I'm wondering if a nation simply sits down and says, look, we're going to lose no matter what happens. Let's just get done with this. Let's just do it. Let's pull it like a bandage off a wound and just rip it right off and be done with it. To heck with it. Hard to do, you know, when you're talking about losing financial assets. But I wonder if the time is coming where some people just say, fine, fine, fine. I know I'm going to lose this. So I'm not going to play with it anymore. To heck with it. if and when we see a moment whereby intent or accident or panic, foreign nations and institutions and individuals who hold U.S. treasuries and U.S. dollars, they decide to dump them, then the stuff hits the fan. And it may be, as many problems as we might have here, as many strengths as we may have here to deal with our problems, I don't think we have enough strength to deal with what may be foreign problems. It's part of the reason why Obama's hamstrung when he comes to dealing with Putin. Can't do anything relative to the Ukraine. They can't make any effective sanctions against Russia and Vladimir Putin. Well, they can talk about it, but that's about as far as they can go. If they do anything, Russia might do something. And I was just listening to a guy named James Richard Rickards today on one of his interviews, and he's just pointing out we are now we used to be in an era of MAD, mutually assured destruction, meaning that if the Russians started a nuclear war with us, yes, we'd be in big, big trouble, but so would the Russians. Both nations would be assured. We both had sufficient nuclear power, nuclear weapons to destroy each other. And they called it, you know, mutually assured destruction, MAD. That was back in the 60s, 70s. Today, we have mutually assured financial destruction, where if anyone gets too frisky when it comes to manipulating the economies, prices, messing with someone else's economy, I mean, if we try to mess with Russia's economy, Russia can mess with our economy. And as a result, we can't do anything without risking mutually assured financial destruction. Russia's in a position to cause our economy to suffer some great and serious decline. And all they have to do, largely, is simply declare to the world that they will no longer take dollars in return for Russian crude oil. Say, yeah, we'll sell it for any currency that's out there. They're still currently selling their crude oil for dollars. I won't say it's exclusively for dollars, but they still take dollars. They stop taking dollars, and that's one of the, you know, cornerstones, or a cornerstone for the perceived value of the fiat dollar. So we're vulnerable to them. They're probably vulnerable to us, but I think to a lesser degree. So nobody's going to make a move, and Ukraine is going to go, you know, part Crimea and eastern Ukraine, and will ultimately go to Russia. And there will be people that are still complaining about it 50 or 100 years from now, and they're talking about the Civil War, you know, the Crimean War, whatever.
Well, we did have a question that came in. We should still have time. If Russia decides to counter the USA sanctions by saying that they will accept any currency except dollar for purchase of oil and gas, will that implode the dollar and create inflation? The indication is shown by the USDX is standing below 80.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, it's just the question is just what I was talking about. That's the danger for the dollar. It's vulnerable. It has been backed by petroleum. Since 1971, they created the petrodollar after we went completely off the gold standard. They created the petrodollar. And the dollar was implicitly backed by crude oil because you had to have dollars to buy crude oil on the international market. And everybody needed crude oil, and therefore there was a demand for intrinsically worthless dollars. This demand created the illusion of value on a global scale. However, when Saddam Hussein came out and started selling crude oil for Iraqi crude for currencies other than the dollar, he threatened the dollar's hegemony. And we hanged him, we invaded, we hanged Hussein, but nevertheless, it started the ball rolling, and now here we are. How many more oil-producing nations can decide to start selling their crude oil for currencies other than dollars, and the dollar still maintain its perceived value? And the answer is unknown, but probably not many. So the whole thing is vulnerable, and we'll watch and see. I'm Alfred Ask here in Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from ABR. The ABR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis. This is Financial Survival. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom. What's next, Melody?
We're going to talk about, do you believe the stocks could plunge 50% in the next year or two?
Well, some people do. A guy by the name of Henry Blodgett does. And Henry Blodgett is an American equity research analyst. He was senior internet analyst for CIBC Oppenheimer and the head of the Global International Internet Research Team at Merrill Lynch during the dot-com bubble. He's been around. He's written a couple of books and so on. He understands. I mean, he is an authority who is worth listening to. Doesn't mean he's a prophet. Doesn't mean he's right. But he writes at the Daily Ticker. He says, as regular Daily Ticker viewers will know, I've recently become concerned about the possibility of a stock market crash, or at least a long period of crappy stock returns. Importantly, I'm not predicting a crash, but I think the odds of one are increasing. And I'm holding on to my own stocks only because I have a balanced portfolio and a long-term investment horizon that I'm comfortable with. The possibility of stocks plunging, say, 50% over the next year or two. Well, he's dealing with that. He is not precisely predicting a 50% fall, but he's predicting that possibility. Now, whether stocks can fall as much as 50% in the next year or two remains to be seen. But the author, Henry Blodgett, is a credible investment commentator. And the fact that he even suggests a possible 50% fall in stock prices suggests that the stock market is getting close to a serious correction. And he's not the first person to suggest this. I mean, a lot of people have been saying, look, we haven't had a significant correction in the stock market since 2008, 2009. They think they're due, just on a statistical basis, they're due for a correction. And some people are predicting 10 to 20%. Blodgett is saying 50% is possible. But the point I'm going to make, in part, in praise of gold, well, a lot of investment counselors and gurus and so on, they agree that the stock market is due for a correction anywhere from 10%, 20%. Blodgett thinks possibly 50%. If you compare it to gold, does anyone say, think, or feel that the price of gold could fall 50% in the next year or two? A few prognosticators suggest that gold might fall another 15 or 20% for a brief period, but no one expects gold to fall 50% and the dollar to thereby rise in purchasing power by 100% over the next year or two. And the point to all of this is at the moment, you know, gold is the way to go. Investing in gold just makes sense. And the manipulators on Wall Street and in the government, they can manipulate the price of gold, but they can't manipulate the fundamentals. All right? Sooner or later, we talked about this at the beginning of the program, or earlier in the program. We talked about the idea that the truth will out. And when it does, we're going to see market corrections. And those investment vehicles that are overpriced are going to be diminished dramatically in price, and those investment vehicles that are underpriced will be increased dramatically. All right? You can manipulate the price, but you can't manipulate the fundamentals. Nothing has happened to change the fundamentals on gold. Nothing's happened in the last 2 years or 5 years or 10 years. The fundamentals are still there, and one of the great fundamentals is that gold is a hedge against dollar inflation and devaluation. And it's virtual certainty. I was listening to someone who said fiat currencies are designed to fail. Huh? They don't just fail because a bunch of greedy SOBs get in a position of power and they say, I know, let's start a fiat currency and we could get fabulously rich. It's not just that. It's not just stupid greed. It's a system where that is designed to allow people in positions of serious power, governments, but others as well, to borrow a lot of money and not repay all of the money back. By means of inflation, they can keep robbing creditors and robbing creditors and robbing creditors. And it's great for borrowers. Fiat currency is great if you're a borrower. But inevitably, when you borrow fiat currency, someone has made that currency available and they actually earned it. They actually worked hard, they worked smart, and they accumulated capital and they make it available for people to borrow. Well, if we keep robbing the people that are smart enough to earn and work hard enough to earn and accumulate, acquire and accumulate capital, keep robbing them, we're going to run out of them. They're going to be gone. And when they're gone, who are we going to borrow from? Our fellow welfare recipients? The people that are getting $60,000 on welfare in Hawaii or $36,000 a year in other parts of the country and the rest of them? Will we be able to borrow from welfare recipients? There is a point, and no one knows exactly where it is, but there's a point where you can't continue to cannibalize the productive members of your society. And when we finally run out of enough people that are somehow making currency available to be borrowed, everything has to, it's like running out of the people who produce food. Get rid of all the farmers. All right, we can sell their farms and make a bunch of money, and that'll be a great idea until we run out of food. Then what? The point I'm making is that there is an imbalance in the system. And it's inherent in the fiat monetary system. It's designed to rob people. It's designed to ultimately fail. And when it does, they write off the existing debt. And the people who borrowed the most, they get away with the most. And who borrowed more than government? In any case, we have a fiat monetary system. They all fail eventually. One source I was listening to today say they're designed to fail. Undoubtedly, they will fail. Only question is when. Now, I've explained it to them, Melody. Now you tell them when it's all going to fail.
Soon.
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 You can't be more specific than that, huh?
Yeah. I read a lot, and I talk to my clients, and they tell me where they hear this and who's saying what and so forth. And there's some, Oh, everybody goes back to, so-and-so predicted what was going to happen in 2006 and 2007 and 2008. And that was a pretty easy time to make predictions because the information was there. It was documented. It was loans. You could follow the loans and know when these accounts would be coming due and the impacts and the follow-through. You could follow the domino when the first one fell. We knew there were some things we didn't know, but we pretty much knew when the ball was going to fall. This time is different. There are no loans coming due. And that's what makes this difficult to predict any time frame. I think we're closer than we ever were of something major happening. As much as what we saw in 2008 in the decline of
there are a number of people who don't think we're going to get out of this year without seeing some sort of calamity. John Williams is one of them at shadowstats.com. Paul Craig Roberts, former Assistant Secretary of the Treasury, he believes this is the year it hits the fan. Neither one of them are prophets, but they're credible.
They're credible, and I believe so many times we fail to understand the power that these people have and their ability to keep things going. And I think that's what messes up a lot of predictions sometimes. They underestimate them. And this is an election year, and it always makes things different.
Well, it usually makes things different, but, you know, always is not always. Nothing is always. All right, or very little as always. A lot of it goes for a long time, but it's not always. We'll see. We're just piling up problem on problem on problem. There is no solution to the problem. And perhaps the biggest issue will be the value, the perceived value of the dollar. If it loses its status as world reserve currency, we're going to see a big problem. If it loses its status as remaining status, and it's not even purely the only petro currency now, but it's at least still the primary petro currency that disappears. You know, hard to say, but we're vulnerable to all of those things. And it's a little like taking a ship through waters where you know there are icebergs. Doesn't necessarily mean you're going to sink. But it also, even if you're sailing on a ship that can't possibly sink, doesn't mean that you won't sink. You know, you play the odds. You look at it and say, what are the probabilities? And how do I want to prepare?
You know, when you read the headlines out of the financial news headlines at all, it all sounds so good. Rebirth of America's dead factories, where you have all these defunct factories around the country are in high demand. As our production once again revs up, you have furniture making coming back to the South, but they never fail to mention that all these defunct factories are being bought up by foreigners.
Yeah.
You know, Chinese, you have a General Motors truck plant that was in Ohio. The factory closed in 2008. Thousands of jobs. This year, Chinese auto glass maker, they closed the deal to buy part of the plant. Now here you have a huge plant. They're buying a part of the plant, but this plant was kind of divvied up. You have other people that have gone in there, new tenants from a diesel engine maker, a robotics company, and a trucking logistics firm. They're getting what was one company is now three or four, but many of them are China. Chinese companies, they're
a step up. Okay, you blanked out for a minute there, Melody. I thought you'd stopped.
I did.
Oh. Then I was right. So I started talking.
Go ahead. You're allowed.
Then you started talking, and I kind of forgot my point. It's good that we're building factories in this country, but it's still not good in this regard. If we don't own the means of production, we'll have more jobs for people, but the profits will be siphoned off out of the country and they will go back to foreign owners. We are being effectively colonized. All right? And the argument is we'll build the foreigners will build new factories, and we use the same arguments. We're going to build new factories, and the wealth will trickle down to the common people, and it never does. We use the arguments in Africa and Asia and the rest of that. It doesn't really trickle down to the common people. They get some of it, but mostly most of the wealth goes to whoever owns the plants. And when that money is removed, we've talked about this a few times on the program, I haven't mentioned it for quite a while, but there is a multiplier effect. It's recognized by economists. It'll run 3 to 7 times. If you bring an extra $1,000 into Dallas, you hold the National Firemen's Association annual convention in Dallas, and each one of the firemen that come into town spend, say, $2,000. And let's suppose that out of all of them, we get an extra $20 million spent in Dallas. Well, Dallas loves this because the multiplier effect indicates that the Dallas economy will be stimulated by 3 to 7 times as much as the new money that's coming in. So if they bring in $20 million, we get $60 million. Maybe $140 million in increased economic activity. It's great to bring in tourists, great to bring in conventioners. We love it. Bring that money in from outside sources. And we get that money, that multiplier effect. But it must also be true that if we send our money out, there is a multiplier effect on the losses. And if we send $20 million to China, guess what? We will suffer an invisible loss of anywhere from 60 to 140 million for that particular transaction. And it will cause the nation, cause communities to degrade and slowly decline. And you can't all, it used to be you had a fresh coat of paint on everything, and now you have buildings that people can't afford to paint them anymore. And nobody knows why. That multiplier effect works both positively and negatively. And it's the great danger when you have colonies. If you're colonized, you send 20 million in profits from the industries in your colony, go back to the colonial power that owns your country. Well, you lose 3 to 7 times that much. And colonies are degraded by being colonized. And we will be degraded also insofar as we allow foreigners to own our corporations and businesses and infrastructure in this country. And we won't get back on our feet till we regain ownership and control of our own productive enterprises. I'm Alfred Adduck. This is the American Financial Survival, thinking of the Tuesday night program. We'll be back tomorrow. Melody and I will be here and hope you'll tune in at that time. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.